Picture this for a second. It's a Tuesday morning, it's raining, you're tired, you wake up, you roll over, grab your phone, and check your bank account, just out of habit. And there, sitting right at the top, is an extra RM1000.
That is the best kind of notification you can possibly get.
You didn't work an extra shift for it. You didn't have to, deal with a nightmare client or answer some panic email at 10 p.m. You didn't sell your old clothes on a marketplace. It's just there. Dividends, pure passive income. I mean, that is the dream, right? That's the financial daydream we all kind of hold on to when we're stuck in traffic.
It is a beautiful daydream. It really is. It's the siren song that lures a lot of people into the world of investing, this idea that your money can work harder than you do. But we have to be honest right out of the gate here.
Go on.
That dream usually hits a brick wall the moment you pull out a calculator.
And that is exactly where we are starting today. We aren't just looking at the dream. We're looking at the math behind the dream. And I think more importantly, the psychological wall that the math builds. Because when you actually crunch the numbers for that RM1000 a month, it's honestly a little terrifying.
It is. So let's just break it down so we can see the full picture. You want RM1000 a month, that's what? RM12,000 a year in passive cash flow. Now, if you are looking at a pretty standard, relatively safe dividend yield of, say, 5%.
Which is realistic. I mean, we aren't talking about crypto moonshots or anything super high risk here, just steady, kind of boring blue chip stocks.
Exactly. So to generate RM12,000 a year at a 5% yield, you need a starting capital of RM200,000.
100,000.
And for the vast majority of people, especially if you're just starting your career, or maybe you're midway through, but you've got a mortgage, car payments, kids, that number doesn't just feel large, it feels impossible.
It feels like a non-starter. You see that number, you think, well, I guess I'll just go buy a lottery ticket instead. Because saving RM200,000 feels like it would take like three lifetimes. It's disheartening.
And that despair is the entry point for our deep dive today. We're looking at this fascinating guide from KasichLau.com titled Simply Lack of Capital. And the core question it poses is, well, it's really uncomfortable, but necessary.
I love uncomfortable questions. What is it?
The question is this: is lack of capital actually a valid excuse for not investing? Or is that six-figure barrier just a psychological mask for a completely different problem?
So, are we actually broke or are we just scared of the mountain?
Or maybe, are we just impatient?
Oof. Okay. Let's get into it. So, the author starts with this great analogy to visualize the problem. He compares this RM200,000 target to standing at the bottom of Mount Kinabalu.
Which is just a perfect image. If you've ever stood at the base of a mountain like that, you know the feeling. It's majestic, sure, but mostly it's just intimidating. It makes you feel small. And the author argues that when people stand at the bottom of this financial mountain, they tend to react in one of three very specific ways.
Okay, let's walk through these paths because as I was reading this, I felt a little called out. I think I've been on at least two of these paths myself at different points.
Oh, most of us have. The first path is the most common one. It's the path of avoidance.
The dope strategy.
Pretty much. You look up at the peak, you see the RM200,000 price tag, and you just calculate how many years of saving that would take. You realize it's decades, and you just decide that climbing is for other people.
Right. People with rich parents,
Yeah.
people who won the lottery, tech CEOs.
Exactly. It's that I'll start investing when I have money fallacy, which is such a tragic irony because usually you need to start investing to get the money. But the psychological logic is this hill is too steep, so I'm not even going to put my shoes on. Self-preservation, right? Why start a race you think you can't finish? But then you have the people who do want to climb, but they hate the idea of walking. This is the second path. The people who look at the mountain and think, I don't have time to hike. I need a helicopter.
This is the path of trading. And it's really crucial to distinguish this from investing because people mix them up all the time. The trader realizes they lack the capital to get rich off dividends now. So they decide to manufacture capital through active movement.
Speed running wealth.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is where you see people diving deep into technical analysis.
Okay, for anyone listening who hears technical analysis and their eyes just glaze over, what are we actually talking about here?
It's the study of price movement. These are the people looking at charts, resistance lines, moving averages, volume spikes. They're trying to predict which way a stock price will move in the short term based on historical patterns. They treat the market like a second job.
Or their only job sometimes. Sometimes their only job. Now, the source makes a key point here. Trading isn't passive income, it's a business. It requires a massive amount of effort, skill, and emotional resilience. You are trying to generate cash flow faster than a 5% yield ever could.
But the risk is totally different.
Completely. You can lose everything if you're wrong. You're trading your time for money, just like a job, but with the added bonus that you might lose all your money instead of getting a paycheck.
Right. It's high stress.
What?
But then there's a darker version of this, isn't there? The third path.
The speculator. This is really the danger zone. The goal is the same as the trader: fast money, big returns, you know, beating the slow dividend grind. But the speculator doesn't want to learn technical analysis.
The text had this funny line about them, that their minds go numb.
Yes. It says their minds go numb after looking at too many screens. They don't want to do the homework. They don't want to analyze balance sheets or stare at candlestick charts.
I can relate to that. Charts are boring.
They are. So instead of doing the work, the speculator takes a shortcut. They start looking for hot tips. They buy based on rumors or news headlines or what their uncle told them at a barbecue.
Or what's trending on Reddit or TikTok. This is the GameStop crowd.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is if you step back and look at the psychology, these three paths, they represent two extremes of human emotion. On one end, with the avoiders, the people who walk away, you have fear.
Just paralysis.
Right. Extreme conservatism. They crave safety so much they accept zero growth. They let inflation eat their savings because they're terrified of losing a single cent.
And on the other end,
you have greed, the pure desire for easy money, the belief that you can bypass the laws of compounding interest just because you want it bad enough. But here's the kicker. Both extremes keep you from actually climbing the mountain.
The fearful never start. And the greedy usually fall off a cliff halfway up because they're trying to sprint up a vertical wall.
That's the paradox. And the author sums it up with a quote that I think just frames the rest of our discussion perfectly. Investing is simple, but not easy.
That sounds like a bumper sticker, but it's actually pretty deep when you unpack it. Let's separate those two words. Simple versus easy. Why is it simple?
Well, the source argues that the logic, the IQ part of it, is incredibly straightforward. You don't need a PhD in economics to get it.
Okay, break it down for us.
You buy shares of a company. That company sells products or services, like, you know, selling burgers or software. It makes a profit. It keeps some of that profit to grow the business, and it pays the rest to you, the shareholder, as a dividend. If the company grows, the dividends grow.
Buy good stuff, hold it, get paid. Logic says yes.
Most people are smart enough to understand that. It's not rocket science. It's just business. But here is where the not easy part comes in. And it has nothing to do with intelligence. It's entirely about EQ, emotional intelligence.
The feelings part.
Let's go back to our math. Suppose you don't have RM200,000. Let's say you scrape together RM20,000.
Which, let's be real, is a lot of money for most people. That's a lot of skip lattes and missed vacations.
Yeah.
Holding on to that old car for two extra years.
It's a huge achievement to save that much. So you take your hard-earned RM20,000, you invest it at that safe 5% yield, and you wait a whole year. What do you get back?
1,000 ringgit.
Total, for the year, which breaks down to
less than RM100 a month.
And there it is, the emotional trap. How does, like, RM80 or RM90 a month feel in today's economy?
Honestly, it feels insulting, it feels petty. It's a tank of petrol, maybe a nice dinner for one. If you don't order dessert, doesn't feel like wealth. Feels like pocket change.
Precisely. The text uses that exact word, petty. And when the return feels petty, you feel small about your investment.
Right.
This creates an ego problem.
The ego problem? I love the quote the source used here. It really highlights how lonely this process is. No high fives from no one, no cheers or confettis, no postings on social media.
Think about the culture we live in. We are addicted to validation. The speculator from path three, even if they're losing money long term, they can post that one screenshot where they made 50% in a day on some meme stock. They get the confetti. They get the likes. They feel like a genius for 24 hours.
To the moon.
Exactly. But the dividend investor, you can't go on Instagram and post a screenshot of your RM83 dividend payment and look like the man. You can't act like a big boy investor. It just looks like you're losing the game compared to the guy claiming he doubled his money in a week.
It's boring. And it's invisible.
And that silence is why it is not easy. It requires you to operate without applause. It requires you to delay gratification, not just for a week, but for years. You have to be okay with being boring while everyone else is trying to be exciting.
So how do you break that cycle? Because the author of this guide, Kay Clow, he didn't start rich. He wasn't born at the top of Bank Kinabalu.
No, and his origin story is really important because it explains why he gets this fear so well. He explicitly says he didn't have a rich dad. He didn't have a blueprint. In fact, he had the opposite. He had financial trauma.
And dad got burned, right?
Badly. During the Asian financial crisis in the late 90s, his father lost a significant amount of money in the stock market and just never touched stocks again.
That is a very specific kind of scar. When you grow up hearing, the market is a casino, or the market will steal your money, it gets hardwired into you. It becomes a survival mechanism to just stay away.
It does. He inherited the belief that stocks are inherently risky. So for him, lack of capital wasn't the only barrier. Fear was the barrier.
So how did he flip the switch? How do you go from stocks are dangerous to I'm going to build a dividend machine?
It started with a book, a classic, Buffettology.
Of course, the Warren Buffett philosophy.
But for him, the key takeaway wasn't just buy Coca-Cola. It was a shift in definition. He realized that stocks aren't risky. Speculation is risky.
That seems like a small distinction. What's the actual difference in his mind?
It's the difference between betting on a horse and owning the racetrack. He realized that if you treat a stock like a lottery ticket, buying it just because you think the price will go up tomorrow, it is risky. But if you treat it as buying a piece of a profitable business that pays you cash, the risk profile completely changes.
You aren't gambling on price, you are participating in profit.
Exactly. But that doesn't solve the petty return problem. Even if he knows it's safe, RM100 is still RM100.
How did he get over the boredom?
This is the part of the deep dive I found most helpful. He completely reframed the whole time commitment. Instead of seeing the slow growth as a failure, he saw it as training.
He stopped trying to win the game immediately and started trying to learn the rules.
Yes. The analogies he uses are fantastic. He compares investing to learning Taekwondo.
From white belt to black belt. Exactly. When you're a white belt, you're clumsy. You don't know the forms. You wouldn't expect to win a gold medal in your first month. You're just trying not to fall over. You accept that you are a beginner.
Or his reading analogy. You don't pick up a 300-page book and start on page 300. You start on page one.
So he looked at that RM100 a month, that petty amount, and he just changed the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
He told himself, this is okay. As long as I can repeat this consistently, I am proving that I have acquired a skill.
That's a huge shift. He stopped looking for beginner's luck and started looking for sustainable competence. He wasn't trying to double his money overnight. He was trying to prove he could keep the money he had.
And that brings us to the most difficult phase of the journey. The author calls it the exponential curve. But honestly, let's call it what it is. The grind. The journey from zero to the first RM100,000.
This is the test of resilience.
It is the hardest phase you will ever go through as an investor. Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's partner, famously said, the first $100,000 is a bitch, and he was not wrong.
No, it's the math. The math isn't helping you yet. You are pushing the boulder uphill by yourself.
Gravity hasn't kicked in.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. When you have RM20,000, a 10% gain, which is a great year, is only RM2,000. It's nice, but it doesn't change your life. It doesn't pay your rent.
But when you have RM500,000.
A 10% gain is RM50,000. That's a salary, that's a car, that's a down payment. In the beginning, you were doing all the heavy lifting through your own savings rate. Your capital isn't strong enough to lift the weight for you.
The source calls these early gains small recurring wins. Financially, they are trickles. But psychologically, they're lifelines.
They are proof of concept. And the text notes something fascinating about the tipping point. The author says that after he hit RM50,000, investing became second nature. He stopped panicking. He stopped overthinking every little movement in the market.
And then after RM100,000, it became significantly easier.
And here's the why that matters so much. It's not just because the compound interest started kicking in, though it did. It's because by the time you save and invest your first RM100,000, you have changed as a person.
You've earned your black belt.
You have. Think about how long it takes to save RM100,000 on a normal salary. That's years of discipline. That's years of saying no to impulse buys. That's years of watching the market dip and not panic selling.
So the money isn't just money. It's a record of your character development.
The market starts rewarding your experience, not just your capital. You've accumulated lessons. You've probably lost money a few times and learned why. You've handled market crashes without freaking out.
So the goal of that phase, from let's say RM30,000 to RM100,000, isn't to get rich.
No, the goal is to survive.
Survive, that sounds dramatic.
But it's true, survive your own emotions. Survive the boredom. Survive the temptation to cash out and buy a nice car just to feel wealthy for a minute. You are surviving long enough to build the character traits, patience, discipline, emotional control, that you will need when you actually do have six figures.
That is such a crucial point. We always think, if I just had the money, I'd be fine. But the source is arguing that if you give a person with no discipline RM200,000, they won't have it for long.
Exactly. They'd be back to path two or three immediately. They'd speculated away on the next hot tip because they haven't learned to value the slow grind. The lack of capital phase is actually a training ground. It's the dojo.
So let's bring this all the way back to the beginning. We started with the dream of RM1,000 a month and that intimidating wall of needing RM200,000 to get there.
And what we found through KSL's insights is that the wall is mostly a mirage.
The verdict from the source is pretty clear. The real obstacle to dividend investing isn't a lack of capital.
It is a lack of patience.
We want the result, the six-figure portfolio without the process.
But the six-figure portfolio is not a prerequisite. It is a result. It is the trophy you get at the end of the marathon, not the shoes you need to start running.
I love that. And for those who want to see the nitty-gritty of how this looks in practice, the source does mention a new book, Dividend Vault, where the author actually documents his whole 10-year journey.
Yeah, he puts his money where his mouth is. He includes 15 case studies of stocks he invested in, the successes and the mistakes. It's basically the flight recorder of his journey up that mountain. It shows he didn't just teleport to the top. He slipped, he stumbled, but he kept climbing.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left thinking about that RM100 dividend check. The petty one, the one with no confetti.
It's the most important check you'll ever earn because it's the first one you didn't have to trade your time for. It's the first proof that the system actually works.
Here's a question for you to chew on as you go about your day. We've talked a lot about the fear of losing money, but I want to flip it.
This raises an important question.
If you are sitting on the sidelines waiting for some large sum of money to start investing, ask yourself this. Are you actually waiting for capital? Or are you just afraid of the boredom required to turn a small sum into a medium one?
Are you addicted to the idea of the big win so much that you're missing out on the sure win?
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
See you next time.